and welcome to Star Wars Sleepover, a laid-back exploration of the captivating and sometimes ridiculous galaxy far, far away. I'm Europa Tokani, and as always, I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Loya Rowan, and today we'll be discussing the moral alignment of rogue archaeologist Dr. Chelly Lona Afra and the first three-story arcs of her titular series. It seems we just can't quit Indiana Jones, Droid Sentience, and Rogue One. Let's do this.
Cantina Corner. As always, Loya and I each chose a Star Wars themed cocktail to enjoy during our sleepover. And for this week, I chose the Barbados cocktail, which I think is basically like a daiquiri. And I was trying to go for something tropical in honor of the last issue of Dr. Afra that we read, where Afra was trying to relax on a beach and get through the full cocktail menu. So I also wanted to use my Falernum, which I'm like obsessed with now.
I'm like, when I saw the recipe you picked, I'm like, it has Falernum in it. I bet that's why you picked it.
Yeah, so definitely still have Falernum, definitely is perishable, so wanted to use that. I also let Loya know that I attempted to make a mojito instead of this because we had made a dinner this past week that involved fresh mint, and I still had some, and I was excited about making a mojito, but I shattered a glass trying to muddle the mint and lime, so that didn't work out because that was all my mint, and I went with the Barbados instead, but I think it's just as appropriate. So it is dark rum. Actually, I mixed dark rum and Bacardi, so it's kind of like half and half. Falernum and fresh lime juice. So it's very simple, but all things that I enjoy. So let me go ahead and try it.
I feel like I have to get some Falernum now.
Oh yeah, it's very good.
It's
like the perfect
delicious
amount of lime juice, and the Falernum just gives it that little something extra. I don't know why, I just feel that I have to promote Falernum. So hard, but recommend Falernum. All right, Loya, what did you make?
So I was looking for like a Wookiee inspired or Chewbacca inspired cocktail because Black Kersantan, who's one of the characters we'll talk about, I initially started looking for a cocktail based on him, which obviously doesn't exist. So then I went to Wookiee cocktail. Those do exist. None of them looked that great to me or had ingredients I had. And then the Chewy cocktail was like also just not something that was like super intriguing. So I found a hot toddy recipe and I modified it to make it a Black Kersantan hot toddy. We will call him Santi and BK because like it's too hard.
Are those your nicknames?
No. Okay. That was definitely on Wikipedia.
Okay.
I think they're sure. Afra's nicknames for him. Okay. Yeah.
I'm just grateful for them overall, so I don't have to try to pronounce Black Kersantan. That's what I say in my head, but I have no idea what is correct or not, so.
Yeah, I feel like I want to, like, growl. So it's like Kersantan. Which is almost definitely not how you say his name. So this is actually the actual name of the cocktail, or it's actually a mocktail, as I made it. It's a black tea hot toddy on the Spruce Eats, and it is water, cloves, cinnamon. You're supposed to have star anise or star anise. Didn't have any, skipped it. Black tea leaves, honey, and then if you want to make it an alcoholic one, you would add 2 ounces of brandy, dark rum, or whiskey. I skipped that. And then a lemon wedge. And yeah, it made a surprisingly small glass. So I initially poured it into this giant mug, and then I had to pour it into a smaller mug, and then I realized I had no Star Wars mugs, and it was even too little of an amount for the mug I used. So I just poured it into a glass and then added a lemon. And I'm not a fan. Like, I've never had a hot toddy before. It feels like it would be very good if you were sick, this would be delicious. Or if the weather had cooperated today, it was supposed to be like 37. It was supposed to get this like rain snow mixture. And I was like, oh yeah, hot toddy without alcohol sounds really good. And yeah, it ended up being like 51 and sunny.
I was a little confused as to why you chose a hot toddy because currently it is 64.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was 37 this morning here, but like then the sun came out and it got warmer. And this would have been great earlier in the season or again, if I was sick. I'm just going to like down it because it's just not that good. I also feel like it's going to like mess with my sleep schedule because I don't usually drink caffeine after like 3.
That does not affect me at all. I just drank a coffee at like 5:45 and it will not affect my sleep in any way.
Well, the weird thing about hot toddies is I don't like lemon in my tea and I don't like honey in my tea, which is the whole purpose of a hot toddy is you have That's the spices, true. Lemon, and the honey. And so I don't know why I thought I was going to like this.
I will say hot toddies do work. I have made them when I've been sick and like had a sore throat or a cough.
Yeah.
And they do actually help.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if I was sick, this would be a great, great thing to make. I would make more of it, mind you. And yeah, I would be sick. I wouldn't care. Cheers.
Cheers.
It is now time for the Mouse Droid segment, where we talk about things that we're doing that involve Star Wars and follow up on things that we may have misspoke or gotten wrong. And I think you have one to start, Europa.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share that we did an interview for 365 Star Wars, which is an awesome website that is run by Amy Reichow. And she is really awesome. She is a freelance writer and researcher, but she is also a contributor to StarWars.com and Star Wars Insider. She was a researcher for Looking for Leia, which we've talked about on the podcast. If you haven't Ooh. Checked out that documentary, definitely do. And she specifically researches women involved with Star Wars for her 365 Star Wars Woman project on her website. So if you have not checked out 365 Star Wars before, definitely do. There's a lot of awesome content on there. And yeah, we had the opportunity to do an interview. So if you're interested in learning more about us and why we started this podcast and some of our favorite Star Wars things and favorite episodes of the podcast, then definitely take a look. And I also wanted to say welcome to anyone who is a new listener, either through that interview or through our little shout out in the Into a Larger World zine recently.
Hello.
Welcome. I hope you stay and enjoy our new episodes and the ones that we've released since we started.
What I have is I want to follow up on the conversation we had last episode about Battlefront 2, which my husband and I had started playing. It's not, like, I had talked about how difficult it was. There is a learning curve, let me say that. I am doing better. I'm now consistently getting third place, and we're actually finishing missions, which was very difficult when we first started. I do really enjoy, I had a chance to play as Leia. She is phenomenal. She is so much fun to play as. Like, you have this little, like, shield you can set down, which is fantastic because I tend to be a coward. And so, like, I'm always constantly, like, running for cover, like, needing to, like, back up from a conflict. And then she has this pistol ability, which allows her to, like, shoot really rapidly. And then she also has mines, or I think they're actually grenades. So much fun. So much fun. Would really recommend anyone to join or play that. It's progressing nicely. I still have not tried the campaign yet, though.
The campaign is definitely worth playing. And actually, I was talking to my brother-in-law, who listens to the podcast, and he was mentioning that he wanted to find out what you were playing on to see if you could play Battlefront with you.
Oh, but my God!
We still haven't figured out if you can actually play together on different platforms. So I'll have to keep you updated on that.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is I finally finished From a Certain Point of View, A New Hope. And one of the stories that really stuck with me, and I was very interested to hear what you thought of it, was the one about Omi, the creature living in the trash compactor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did go back and refresh my memory. And yeah, that story was really interesting.
Yes, I agree. And it made me, the author of that story is Nnedi Okorafor. And I had actually read one of her novels, Who Fears Death. And I had Binti, which I believe she also wrote. Yes. On hold for a long time. And I just activated that hold because now I'm very interested to see what else she had to write about, what else she's written. But yes, it was so interesting. Like, obviously, Omi was Force sensitive, but I was interested, like, what she, like, took from Luke. That was very, she pulls Luke under, and then there's like there's this description of like this light thing, like almost like a version of Luke that she sloughed off. And now I kind of want to watch A New Hope again to see like if there's a noticeable change in personality. Like, is that what she was referring to?
Well, obviously, it's a totally different take on what happens, because if you watch A New Hope, like, they're all trying to escape this trash compactor, and then they realize that there is, you know, what you would say is a monster in it. It's a Dianoga, specifically. And it's threatening. It pulls Luke under, because they think that it wants to drown him. But the story is called The Baptist, and so it's implied that it's like a sort of baptism that she's pulling him under the water and helping him to understand something about the Force, which, like, kudos to the author for even thinking about that. Like, it's just such an interesting take on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely that, and the red one has lingered with me. Also, one of the earlier ones was about a female Tusken Raider, and that one also has kind of stuck with me, where she was basically, like, struggling with her limitations in her group and wanting more.
So, yeah, there's a lot about how she recognizes something that she has that's also in Luke. So, there's a quote where she's thinking there was something sparkly and electric that she felt in every part of her flesh. She did not understand their languages, and she wished she could. The first thing she'd have demanded of this one was to know why he could submit to it too. Because if he had not already, she knew he would eventually.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, she just, like, feels this urge to connect with Luke and help him to understand what's going on with him.
Yeah. And then what I was trying to describe was, like, with her sharp eyes, she saw it, a shade of him sloughed off, the flesh of this shade pale and delicate-looking, naked. It shook off of him, the face of this dim version of him wide-eyed, the mouth opened, shocked. Then the shade dissolved in the water. Her mission was complete. Very cool.
I think it's partially about Luke accepting his Force sensitivity and having to kind of face it and accept it as part of himself, and like let go of the part of him that is afraid of it. I feel like I'm in like a college course right now, but that is a good thing to feel in regard to Star Wars short stories, so I appreciate it.
Totally. Well, somewhat related, because we were talking about Luke, I started watching The Falcon and the Winter Prince, and just Winter have to Soldier? Say, yes. Yes.
Winter Prince. I was like, are you talking about the same thing?
Winter Prince. What is Winter Prince? I don't know. I don't know what the Winter Prince is. Don't know why I said that. But Sebastian Stan does not look like Mark Hamill in any way, shape, or form. No.
I can see how he would if he were portraying Luke. But yeah, if you just, like, look at him, I don't see it.
Nope. Like, I've looked at Mark Hamill many times, and my feelings towards Mark Hamill, though affectionate, are quite different than my feelings towards Sebastian Stan. start off with Dr. Aphra. Her first appearance is in From a Certain Point of View. She's in...
It actually is not her first appearance.
Oh my god. No, because, like, I swear,
So, I think I was looking at the article that you were looking at on StarWars.com. It's her first appearance, like, in the Star Wars canon timeline. But her actual first appearance was in the Darth Vader comic. I think it was confusingly written, but it was, like, her first appearance, like, chronologically.
Well, that makes way more sense. I was like, this is a weird way to, like, introduce this character. Like, if this is the first thing she's been in, like, that's odd. Okay, so her first chronological appearance is in The Trigger, which is in From a Certain Point of View. It's by Kieran Gillen, who also wrote...
Kieran Gillen wrote the Darth Vader comics that Aphra originally appeared in, and then he also wrote the Aphra comics that we're going to be discussing. Okay, I think he wrote something else that you read that's not Star Wars related, and I can't remember what it is now. And I know this from Goodreads.
See, friends on Goodreads. The Wicked and the Divine. That's what I know him from. It was kind of like crash landing on you, right? Where it was solid, 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 and then it just, like... missed the landing. Okay. So I do recommend Crash Landing to people, and I would recommend The Wicked and the Divine. But in comparison to, like, Saga, no.
Okay. Well, Saga is, like, next level. So I feel like there are few things that you could even attempt to compare to Saga, to be fair.
Yep.
Also, when is Saga going to come back?
So I was just talking about this with a group of former colleagues, and they're on a hiatus. And it sounds like they might be approaching not being on a hiatus, but they did determine that it is, oh man, it's either halfway point or the third point. Like, the story arcs, there's going to be, like, another set of issues, the same number, and then maybe another set after that. Which is to say, I don't know. Long way of saying this. I don't know.
Well, they've been on a hiatus for a
years.
While. Yeah, years at this point.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a tangent, but if you haven't read Saga and you like Star Wars, like, you probably would like Saga, and if you like weird things that are just, like, incredibly compelling, then...
And disturbing.
Read Saga.
Yeah, forgetting the cyborg guy? I'm forgetting his name. The Prince.
Prince Robot?
Prince Robot, yes. So there's a scene in, like, one of the first few issues where Prince Robot is on a planet and this, like, deadly toxin comes out and it's, like, deadly. And someone's trying to help him, like, one of the species that it's deadly to. And I still, like, this pain of comics is, like, emblazoned in my head because this little, like, mouse creature goes, maybe I'm okay, maybe I'm okay, maybe it doesn't affect me. And he's like, I don't feel right. And then he explodes and is just, like, so traumatizing. I had to talk about that because that's the first thing that comes to mind when I recommend Saga to people is, like...
Oh, I don't think of that at all.
Are they going to see this and be okay with it? And actually, you know what, now that I think about it, I should probably be thinking of other things in Saga.
I mean, really, what I think about is, like, graphic sex scenes.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Anyway.
Thankfully, I don't think I've recommended Saga to many people.
I recommended American Gods to my now husband on our second date. And if you've read American Gods, you can probably recall the scene that I completely forgot about. And then... like, the next time I saw him, he was like, what the hell did you tell me to read? However, we got married, so obviously it worked out.
Yeah, I read Neil Gaiman at the ceremony. Then, after, chronologically, she appears in The Trigger. She is in a series of Darth Vader comics written by Kieran Gillen. So she's in Darth Vader Volume 1, which is Vader 1-6. Darth Vader Volume 2, Shadows and Secrets, Issues 7 through 12. Vader Down, Star Wars 3, Rebel Jail, Darth Vader Volume 4, End of Games, Issues 20-25. So there's this whole series of story arcs that she's involved with. I have not read any of them, although I want to.
I have read some, but not all of them. And by way of explanation, I read any of these comics in the first place because there was one Christmas where my husband just like bought me a bunch of random Star Wars comics.
Nice.
And some of them were Dr. Aphra because I think they had just come out recently. And I really enjoyed them, so I sought out more Dr. Aphra comics, but I still haven't read them all. I was, like, trying to complete the Kieran Gillen Vader comics at one point, but I actually have not. So, like, I know that I've read Vader, I've read Vader Down, I've read End of Games, but I have not read the Star Wars comics where Aphra originally appears and like where she meets Luke and everyone. So it was a surprise to me that she knew any of them, I guess. So like I'm kind of all over the place with what I have read and not. So this was like my first concerted effort to kind of like read everything, not everything, but a portion of Dr. Aphra in a more or less linear fashion.
Which is an advantage of Marvel Unlimited, is they do present them in a linear fashion, which is nice. And in that same discussion where I was talking to my former colleagues about Saga, one of them had just like started using Marvel Unlimited because she's a big X-Men comic fan. And she was saying it makes it so much easier to like, you know, progress through things in a straightforward fashion, because it's hard to keep track of like, you know, when you have these different story arcs and crossovers. It is complicated. Although, yeah, we'll talk about that more in regards to Dr. Aphra.
And they do have collections, too, that you can browse by that makes it easy as well. So if you want to get into Star Wars comics or like want to get more into Marvel and read some of the Marvel arcs that have some bearing on like the current MCU stuff, I definitely would recommend Marvel Unlimited.
Mm-hmm. All right, so then we'll talk a little bit about each of the characters, and then my plan is to just kind of go through the three main arcs we read and kind of talk about our reactions to the different things that happen. So the main character, obviously, is Chelly Lona Aphra. It's funny because in one of the later episodes or later issues of the story arcs we read, there's things called doctor's notes. And a reader wrote in and said, I'm really enjoying the series. Is there any opportunity to like do a crossover with Indiana Jones? And the responses are written in the tone of BT and Triple Zero. And so Triple Zero writes back, I was unaware of this Indiana Jones until now. I've looked into him and I have to say I'm shocked. How can they have hoped to get away with such an obviously derivative character? I plan to send my lawyers, and as I don't have any lawyers, I plan to send a homicidal blastomech droid instead. So, yes, the first thing that comes to mind when reading Dr. Aphra is obviously Indiana Jones. And that's obviously very intentional. I used to love Indiana Jones. We've talked about this on the pod. Don't as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of nice to have, like, the things I did like about Indiana Jones included and other things not included.
Yeah, so I guess we should have said prior to this. So she's an archaeologist, but she's like a very shady archaeologist.
Rogue.
She's a rogue archaeologist. She has basically a fraudulent doctorate, and she really is just like stealing artifacts and selling them, which, I mean, is not far off, if not exactly the same thing that Indiana Jones does. But I think there's some criticism of that that's built into Dr. Aphra as well. Like, there's a conversation that she has with her dad in the first act that we'll talk about where she's like, what do you think I do? It's my job. Like, I just steal things and sell them for profit.
And then the other thing that, like, kind of distinguishes her from Indy, although maybe not as much as, like, you might think, given, like, our critique of Indiana Jones at this point, is her morality. And it's weird. Because, again, I feel like I have a tolerance for gray areas and people who aren't necessarily on the up and up. But Aphra definitely, like, gave me pause at certain points. And so I was trying to, like, place her on the morality alignment graph, which is basically, like, you have a spectrum of evil to good, evil, neutral, good, and then lawful, neutral, chaotic, and there's an intersection, a matrix of these things. So thinking about this, I was thinking that Aphra would be chaotic neutral. Although I did find something, like, I was trying to, like, see if other people agreed with me, and someone put her on chaotic evil.
I would agree with you on chaotic neutral. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you say that she bothers you morally, because she doesn't bother me that much. Like, I don't know. She's not a person that I would want to know personally or be friends with, because obviously you would not be able to trust her. But I don't think she has, like, outright bad intentions. I think she's just very selfish.
So I think it's more her chaotic side that bothers me. Because, like, I've taken a lot of these quizzes because I keep getting lawful good, which, if you know me, I feel like is not accurate. I feel like I am either lawful neutral or, which actually I may be lawful neutral. I feel like I'm more neutral good. But it's like the fact that, like, she goes into things and, like, just tossing stuff all over the place. Like, it's just, it's, there's always chaos surrounding her, and it's, like, bothersome.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's because she is just always out for herself, and she
doesn't have a plan.
She doesn't have a plan. She just does whatever serves her at that moment, and it has repercussions for other people, but she doesn't, like, go out of her way to hurt anyone, I would say.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, she changes her mind just because someone happens to be cute, for instance, which we'll talk about. I was like, what if she wasn't cute? Like, would she just kill her? Like, she
just has a whim. That you had said too about Han and whether she was comparable to Han, and
yeah,
I don't know. I'm sure people would argue with me on this, but I don't think Han is chaotic neutral.
Mm-mm.
I think he's chaotic good.
Yes, I would agree. I would definitely agree. And I feel like they try to make the case in the Screaming Citadel arc that they are similar. And No.
I think Han, like, wishes he were like Aphra. Like,
yeah.
He tries to portray himself that way, that he only cares about himself. He only cares about what's going to benefit him. But that's not true, even if he tries to project that. Like, he actually is a good person, and this goes back to Solo, and I think we talked about this in our episode on Solo, where Kira tells him, like, you're a good guy, and he's like, no, I'm not, and she's like, yes, you are. Like,
yeah,
he is.
And it ties into, from a certain point of view, because there's that whole story with Lando, where Lando realizes the Millennium Falcon, like, he's in a bar, and it's after the Death Star blew up, and he's watching the vids on it, and he realizes that Han's involved in this, like, supposedly a suicide mission to help the rebels, and he, like, is just sitting there pondering, like, what Han knows and why Han did this. And it's just, I think, like, there's an element of not understanding from Lando there, who is also very entertaining in Battlefront 2, let me just say. There's a lot of rolling. And
is Lando tapes. Not entertaining?
That is true. You get to pick, too, whether or not you have Donald Glover or
Billy Dee Williams.
So you get to pick, and I obviously have Donald Glover with the yellow cape. Hilarious.
Of course.
And then the first thing in this particular, like, once Dr. Aphra gets her own series, we're introduced pretty early on to her dad, who is very evocative, deliberately so, of Dr. Jones Sr., although not as charming, because it's not Sean Connery, and doesn't have a Scottish accent, and also is blackmailing her. So we'll get into that story arc. Any thoughts on him? He seemed kind of meh to me.
He's very meh to me as well. He just is kind of irritating in being so focused on his one thing, and
right, it's like
just being Dr. totally unresponsive to anything else. I wouldn't say that I like him.
Yeah. I feel like he has elements of Dr. Jones Sr., but not enough to make him that charming. And then we have the two droids who I believe, given how things progress in these story arcs, used to belong to Darth Vader and now are hanging out with Aphra.
Yes. So there is a backstory behind that that I don't totally know, so I won't try to go into it. But she gets them during her time in the Darth Vader comics. I don't know why. Like, I feel like this is so out of character for me, but I love BT and 000. Like, I love them.
Yeah. I loved them until the last arc, and then I got a little scared.
They are scary, but, like... Yeah.
I don't know.
I enjoy them. And I have to mention, ever since I've read the Dodger Aphra comics, there's this yogurt. Oikos?
Yeah.
000 yogurt. I don't know what the 000s are. It's like zero fat, zero sugar, zero I don't know what else. But I have some in my fridge right now, and all I can think of when I see that is 000 in the comics.
I did not put that together, although as soon as you said Oikos, I'm like, oh yeah, that's hilarious. He should create his own, there should be, well, maybe, probably not, there's never going to be branding, like, 000 on your 000 yogurts. Buy now.
I doubt that Oikos wants to associate their brand with a homicidal protocol droid.
Yeah.
But I do, like, I think that's the thing with Aphra, too. Like I said, I would never want to be friends with her. I don't think I would like her as an actual person, but her character is just, like, compelling and entertaining, yes. And so are BT and 000.
Yes. They also fit in with the chaotic, except they would be chaotic evil. Yes. Hardcore. Despite being droids, they just like seeing people run around in panic. So, and then also early on, she's traveling with Black Kerr Santan, aka Santi, or BK, as Aphra calls him, and as we will call him, because I'm sure everyone just wants us to stop trying to say his name. And he's a homicidal Wookiee.
Who used to be a gladiator.
Yes. Yes. There's a whole backstory where he's trying to find those who forced him to fight. And we'll get into that as well. And then minor other characters, or brief characters, I guess. They're not minor. Imperial Lieutenant Magna Tolvan. She is in the first story arc. And she, as we'll discuss, she's cute. She's allowed to live because Aphra doesn't want to kill her because she's cute. And apparently, like, she's in later comics, which I totally got the sense of, like, this is not the last we'll be seeing of Tolvan. And then Leia, Han, and Luke are in this series of comics. And I had written that I felt kind of differently about them. And that was because I feel like Leia was really harsh. And it's addressed in the Screaming Citadel.
Yeah, it is.
But... I felt like, I don't know, I wasn't thrilled to see them, surprisingly. I was kind of like, what are you guys doing in these comics? And Luke was just...
So, I know you didn't read this whole arc, which was the Screaming Citadel arc. Yeah. I had read the Dr. Aphra portions and not the Star Wars portions, and we were both just very confused, and then figured out that it was split between the Star Wars comics and the Dr. Aphra comics. So I went back and read them, and I actually loved like the standalone introduction that they did to Screaming Citadel. I think a big part of it was the art. So it's written by Kieran Gillen, and then artist is Marco Cicchetto, who is Italian, and I don't, it's just gorgeous. Like, I just loved looking at this particular part of the arc, and Luke has some fabulous, like, gothic horror outfits going on in it, so I would definitely recommend it, like, for that alone.
I will have to check this out. I was initially deterred, and we'll talk about this, from pursuing additional things or the additional issues for that story arc because I really didn't care for the illustration. And I don't know who that illustrator is. I will look it up as well. But yes, I'm glad to know that it's not the same person.
No, but Marco Cecchetto, I think, just did this one part of the Screaming Citadel arc, and then they kind of, like, rotate among other artists, and I definitely prefer his portion of it over all the other ones.
That is something that occurs in The Wicked and the Divine, is occasionally they'll have, like, rotating or, like, changes to the illustrators, and I feel like that makes a big difference. There have definitely been times where I'm just like, this could be a very compelling story, and I cannot stand these graphics. In the Screaming Citadel issues that we read, the colorist is Marco Cecchetto for the cover, which looks fantastic. For the actual interior, it's Antonio Fabella, and the inker is Andrea Brocardio. I apologize to everyone in the industry for oversimplifying your jobs. And then the other character is Darth Vader, he's Darth Vader. I don't know why I included him on this list. Like, I have nothing to say about Darth Vader. He's in it.
Skip Sana.
Yeah, because Sana, we actually do have things to talk about.
Okay.
So Sana is a character who shows up in the Screaming Citadel arc, and there's backstory between her and Aphra, and she was referenced in Last Shot, which I thought the name sounded familiar. So, and you have some backstory for
her
too.
Yes. So additional backstory for her is that she also claimed at one point that she had married Han Solo, and that was actually part of a scam that they had undertaken in order to pull off a robbery, and then Han Solo took her portion of the proceeds from the robbery. So they kind of have, like, some bad blood as well, but I think she actually has a romantic history with Aphra.
Yes. Yes, she does, because Luke's, as we'll discuss in the Screaming Citadel, was just like, what did you see in her? Good question.
The Dr. Aphra comics actually have won the GLAAD Outstanding Comic Book Award.
Mm, that's cool. I'm excited to see, like, how things progress. Like, especially between Aphra and Tolvin, I feel like that's going to be good. So for this episode, we're going to be focusing on the Dr. Aphra single issues 1 through 13, which cover a story arc with Aphra's father, the Screaming Citadel in part, and an arc called Aphra and the, oh my gosh, Aphra the Enormous Prophet. Wow. All right. So the first arc with her dad is issues 1 through 6. I'm not having read the Darth Vader comics. It kind of just, like, starts kind of abruptly with Aphra killing a fellow archaeologist, or at least shooting him and leaving him for dead in the assumption that he's actually going to die. I felt like there was probably some backstory between these two that I was unaware of, because she definitely knew who he was.
If there was, I'm not aware of it.
All right. Because there is also in this issue, she references, like, she comes back to the ship and Triple Zero's like, oh, did it go well? Or, like, there's an allusion to, like, this particular character, Obik Tan, shooting her, leaving her for dead. And she felt like she did a better job, like, he's actually going to die. So then the syndicate, I wasn't sure which syndicate it was. I was trying to, like, look into this. A syndicate representative shows up, says Aphra owes him some money. She promises to pay him back. There's a fight between Sandy and the two hired goons the syndicate representative has. He backs off, and then Triple Zero, in the first, like, real action sequence we see him in, follows the man into the bathroom and then kills him and makes it look like a heart attack. Then, after she kills the fellow archaeologist, she takes what he had salvaged, she goes to sell it to pay back the syndicates, as well as Santi, who we also find out she owes money, and that's why he's traveling with her to make sure that she pays up, and she finds out that her credentials have been revoked. And this, I think, is the end of the first issue.
I believe so.
And there's a backstory as to how she got her doctorate, which was basically, she was antagonizing her advisor over and over, and then he is annoyed and hates her. And so, for reasons that don't make sense to me, It seemed to make sense to him. He takes her to this secret area where he has Amber Sign symbiotes in stasis, like hidden away illicitly, and says, like, pretty much threatens her and is like, I'm never giving you your doctorate because you're flesh. Archaeology isn't about flesh. This is the work of decades. Archaeology is about determination. And then he's like, and I'm never giving you your doctorate. And so then Aphra steals the symbiotes, plants them someplace, and then gets credit for this massive find.
Yeah, I mean, that seems unethical not to award doctorates to people just because you don't like them, for sure. But yeah, also not ethical to steal someone's research and then basically destroy their career while also building your own career on something that you didn't actually do.
Yeah. And I feel like the hardest part of that for me was, like, she has a friend who's, like, supportive of her. And this friend is so excited for this find. She's like, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to finding, like, to analyzing this. And Aphra, despite knowing that it's all fake, is just like, yeah, you do that. I'm like, okay. Some friends. Then I think at that issue, like, it is revealed, like, her dad is there and present. And the issue number 2 opens with Aphra burning her father's work, revealing that her mother has died on an outer rim planet, and then saying, oh, the therapist says I have some issues, fair to warn you. And then it cuts to them in the present time.
Yeah, so I guess the basic backstory is her dad became obsessed with, I guess, the sect of Jedi called the Ordu Aspectu. I'm gonna guess how you would pronounce that.
That sounds right.
And just, like, abandons she and her mother during the Clone Wars to go and research this, and her mom dies on this, like, backwater planet in the meantime.
Yep. And Aphra's like, I mean, what is she, like, 10, 12?
Yeah.
Yeah. And somehow she manages to, like, get back, and, like, her dad's surprised to see her, and I'm just like, so you just weren't keeping in touch with your ex-wife and child at
you
all.
You just left, and you were like, I don't know what happened to them, but I'll just go on with my life.
Yeah. And this was something that, like, was a very thin reference to me to, like, Indiana Jones's dad's obsession with the Holy Grail. And, like, there is almost, like, a very similar encounter between Indiana and his dad about, like, you know, mom died, like, da 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 da. Granted, Indiana Jones does not burn his father's work or destroy it. So then her dad blackmails her into helping him continue his search for the Ordu Aspectu. And for some reason, I think it's 000 who, like, asks about it and just is just like, oh, what is this? And her dad, like, excitedly tells this tale that he's, like, been thinking of in his, like, you know, this is what happened on this planet. And Aphra tells the story, and you can see the illustrations are, like, she's one of the characters and her dad's one of the characters. And then BT gets involved, and it's just the Citadel is this giant, large BT in the background. It was entertaining.
So, context is, they're a sect of Jedi who wanted to become immortal, and there was one particular, now I have to get into the semantics of, like, were they Jedi, were they not, because
I feel like
Luke
they
is extremely
Jedi.
Adamant that they were not Jedi.
Yeah.
So they're, we'll call them an offshoot of the Jedi, I guess. Anyway, one of them was named Rur, and he placed his consciousness somehow in this crystal, and we'll get into more about that, but, like, this is what Aphra's father is searching for.
Yes, the Citadel. But before they get there, they have to find out where it is, which, again, very thinly veiled references to Indiana Jones. This is essentially the part in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they, like, find the tiny diagram of the city, and they're inserting the staff to see exactly where they must go. This is about where we're at when they arrive at Yavin 4. And then issue 3 starts off with, like, Aphra's dad being like, wait, what? There's a Death Star. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also interesting in the context of the story and from a from a certain point of view that we were talking about, the trigger, which is Aphra trying to loot the abandoned rebel base on Dantooine, and she encounters Imperials and has a confrontation with them, and finds out through the process of that Alderaan has just been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the story is her trying to wrap her head around it and thinking about how it was probably easy to destroy Alderaan because it's a You're not looking at one person face to face. And she's like telling all of this to one of the Imperials that is like about to shoot her.
Yeah.
And then, and then she ends up disabling his blaster so that he can't shoot her. But she tells him to take his helmet off. And then she lets him go because she is having this whole like coming to terms with taking a life and what the destruction of Alderaan means, and tells him to tell his superiors that he shot her and left her. So,
and then he doesn't.
Yeah.
And he raises the alarm and she's like, man, when will I ever learn? And I don't know, Aphra.
No, but yeah, I mean, so like she has this reaction to the destruction of Alderaan that actually makes her like have all of these like moral considerations about what it means, and then her dad later on is just like, what happened?
Yeah, he thought it was like a rumor, which I always think about this in terms of like fantasy series, especially like Game of Thrones, where it's just like without having the internet or things that you can actually like look things up and confirm, it is all just hearsay. Granted, in Star Wars, there are vids and feeds and everything. Right. And I feel like
they do basically have the internet.
But her dad acts like it's just like, oh, I was a lowly scholar here. I don't know what's happening in like different places. Yeah. And in this issue, issue 3, we're also introduced for the first time to Tolvin, and she picks up the signal from Aphra and her dad and dispatches an investigation. And it is Santi who is pretty much providing a distraction, and just major respect for him because I feel like he's handling this like group of Imperials and walkers like just so efficiently. And I wrote better than like, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka, and I was like, wait, they never dealt with this because, you know, or not together at least. This was that would have been after Anakin fell, so. But he's very good. He's very efficient. And Aphra's, like, totally unfazed by any, like, threat to his safety. It does not seem like he is in any real danger. And then, while he's providing this distraction, Aphra and her dad are activating the temple to find clues. And then we get to issue 4, and I'm not going to say much about this one, because it's just pretty much, like, some backstory for Tolvin. She was demoted and sent to Yavin 4. And then Aphra and her dad find the coordinates, presumably, for the Citadel of the Order You Expect To. And then, issue 5, they arrive there. And there's the part where I'm just like, there's nothing there. And then, oh, it is there. And the first thing they find is a bunch of corpses. And there was an interesting, or at least I thought it was an interesting backstory about Jedi customs, about the Jedi were typically cremated, which was news to me. I guess the only person that we've actually seen any sort of mortuary rites for was Qui-Gon Jinn.
Well, also Anakin / Darth Vader. Yeah.
Yep, you're right. It is true.
Why did Luke know that was the Jedi custom? I don't know, but he did it.
Yeah, that's impressive. Because I was just thinking, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi disappeared. Luke disappeared. We don't really see any other Yoda disappeared. So it was interesting that this
Why didn't
like,
Anakin disappear?
I don't know. Well, but I mean, in, was it Clone Wars? Where there's that whole backstory about Yoda, like, learning
right.
the way to, like, make his...
But then Anakin is a Force ghost.
Yeah, that really just doesn't make sense.
But then Ben also disappears, but is not a Force ghost. Confusing.
Yep. I feel like there's a lot going on there, and people are not on the same page.
No.
I'm also still upset in Rise of Skywalker that it wasn't Luke who talked to Kylo. Like,
me
it still pisses me off. So in this part, at this point, Aphra starts looting the corpses because they're dead. And her dad is horrified. And so she, this is the part we talked about earlier where she goes, what do you think I actually do, Dad? Archaeology is just grave robbing with fancy paperwork. And solid, solid. Not today, necessarily, but in the day. Indiana Jones style, yes. I don't even think Indiana Jones had fancy paperwork. And then...
Yeah, I think Indiana Jones just, like, went and got things and then brought them to a museum and was like, do you want this?
Yeah, exactly. It is hard for me to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. That first scene where it's just like, the natives obviously want their stuff. Like, what are you doing? Leave it.
Yeah. Yeah, Indiana Jones, we've discussed, we yeah. watched Indiana Jones together, and it bothered us.
Yeah, yeah. So, Aphra and her dad are followed by Tolvin and her troops. Black Carson, why do I keep trying to say
Black
that?
Carson.
Andy. Carson.
Black Carson.
Black Carson. Kerr Santan. Santee BK. BK. BK provides distraction and then just leaves. Aphra is upset, but understanding. And then her dad has this whole, like, soul-revealing interaction with Aphra, where he reveals that his obsession was all about trying to make the galaxy safer, and that he and her mom disagreed with each other, but never hated each other. And it was all kind of Aphra's misreading of the situation, because she was a child at the time, that they separated and agreed to go their own ways, but there wasn't as much animosity as she was assuming. I mean, that really doesn't excuse his realization that, like, her mom died on a planet. He didn't know where his daughter was.
Yeah.
It was a little heartwarming, but not really. And then he starts to talk about the way that she can, like, get her doctorate back. And she just stops him and says, don't be naive. If you remove the gun from my head, I may be tempted to stab you. And I'm like, yeah, I think she would. And then they activate the Citadel's controls and the Eternal Roar, which just reminds me of cats for some reason.
Cats?
Yeah, like, roar. Like, all I'm imagining is, like, a tiger or something.
I instantly imagine the musical Cats.
Mm.
So yeah. That was interesting, even though I still to this day have not actually watched the musical Cats.
So I saw in Andrew Lloyd Webber, like, a recording of the play. I have not seen the movie. Nor do I want to see the movie. I was not impressed actually with the play. So I don't think I'd like the movie.
Yeah, I don't think I would be impressed with the play. Like, I don't know.
It's moderately annoying, as I recall. Granted, this was like a while ago at this point. But I do love Memory as a song.
I just don't feel like I could take it seriously.
No. It's essentially short stories set to song, and, like, there's a loose narrative, but most of the time I was just like, who is this character? Are they going to show up again? Like, why are they cat?
No disrespect to Andrew Lloyd Webber, I guess. Oh. I guess.
Issue number 6, the end of the story arc. Eternal Roar is, is awoken, and he immediately tries to take over the world, because that's how he rolls. And wow, I skipped over all of this in my notes. It doesn't go well for him. And I did appreciate it when, like, Aphra, like, takes her hair tie out. And this is just something that, like, I adore. I just really like it when it's, like, it's hair tie time. And it's just, like, boom, hair tie is up. Like, she's got her hair in a bun. And then she uses the lightsaber she filched to destroy the controls. And Eternal Roar is no more. And we should do a reading.
So, okay.
Do you want to be Eternal Roar? Or do you want to be Aphra?
I feel like you should be Eternal Roar.
I feel like I should. Yes. There are a lot of exclamation points. I love that. You return to bask in my presence, mortal?
Well, not really. I'm an archaeologist. I'm all about the careful extraction of ancient artifacts. Mostly.
Ah!
No! You'll destroy the Citadel.
Sound like my dad.
You doom us all.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
So yeah, she just takes this massive chance and it works out for her. She goes through life like it's a D&D game where she's just like rolling the dice every single time. Die, really. And then she takes the crystal because despite destroying the controls, there's still this massive crystal that's fueling them. I'm assuming it's a kyber crystal.
Yeah, I guess. They never explicitly say that.
Yeah. But it has the essence of Eternal Roar. And then the Citadel starts to fall apart. She randomly decides to save the Imperials, including Tolvin, by like telling them to cross the bridge, and then she carries them to safety. And then she leaves Tolvin on a random planet. I guess Tolvin was the only one who survived. I don't know what happened to everyone else. She says, as a parting shot, killing you would have been the smart move, but you're cute. And I just had a question. What if she hadn't been?
I guess she would have died.
Yeah. So, good job, Tolvin. Genetic luck. It's great. And then Aphra talks to her dad, and they agree to deposit Roar's crystal into a safety deposit situation. But Aphra swaps it. And so it's just a fake that's in there. And then her dad leaves. And then, because she doesn't have a ship, because Santi and the droids are gone, she goes back to the syndicate and pays her debts, which was kind of a surprise. Again, just random. So what were your overall thoughts about this story arc?
So this one I had read before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, overall, I feel like I approach the Dr. Aphra comics as just kind of being like a fun ride. Like, they're not super profound or anything, but it's just nice to have like a fun kind of adventure story within Star Wars.
Yeah. This story was fine to me. I was like, okay, sure. I was expecting like more, but it was fine. I don't know why I was expecting more. Probably because we start off talking about Solo and then get into this whole segue about droid sentience. And didn't do any of that during this. All right. And then the next two issues are The Screaming Citadel, which we talked about is actually part of a larger story, some of which is not included under the Dr. Aphra name. Yeah.
So as I mentioned, it started off with a one-shot that was kind of like the kickoff of the arc. And that was the one that I was talking about that has the beautiful art that I would definitely recommend. And I know, like, Kieran Gillen had talked at one point about how they really wanted to do just kind of gothic horror within Star Wars. So it's nice. Set on this planet and in the Screaming Citadel, which, like, has a name in the native language that I won't even try to pronounce. But 000 translates it as the Screaming Citadel. And this all comes about because Aphra is trying to take Eternal Roar's crystal to the queen of the Screaming Citadel because she has one night a year where she allows people to come to her and present her basically with oddities that she might be interested in. And in exchange for bringing her something that pleases her, she will, like, do a favor for you. So Aphra goes and finds Luke because she has met Luke previously in the Star Wars comics and knows that he's a Jedi in training and that he is force sensitive. And so her plan is to bring Luke to the queen.
Wow.
And in turn get her to activate the crystal for her.
Wow. That is, like, so much worse than what I was thinking. I thought, like, Aphra was just taking advantage of the situation. But no, she led Luke there on purpose while telling him that she wants to find him a tutor.
Wow. Yeah, so, like, the sad thing is, like, Luke is aware of this. So she goes to Luke and she's just like, I need to go to this place and have this woman do this thing for me. And like, you're trying to be a Jedi and there's a Jedi consciousness in this crystal. And if she activates it, you can learn from it. And he's just like, okay. And wow. Then he just like pieces out without telling anyone. And he's like on Aphra's ship like, oh, I wish I could have told Han and Leia, whatever. She's like, whatever, we don't have time for that. So like, they don't know where he is.
That makes so much sense. Because, yeah, I mean, in the Dr. Aphra comics, like, they land the ship, Luke is suddenly there, and then Han and Leia show up, and they're like, what are you doing with her? And I'm like, don't you know? Like, nope, didn't know. Like, in my notes, I'm like, why is Luke here? And now Han and Leia are involved, too? Question mark, exclamation points. And so is Sana, like, what's Sana's role in all of this? Like, how is she?
She's just with all of them, like, okay. Doing something for the rebellion, I think.
Huh.
When this all occurs.
Yeah. Okay. So then when, like, Han and Leia and Sana land, Sana sees Aphra and tries to kill her because of their backstory and because Aphra is just inherently untrustworthy. So solid to Sana. Luke defends her, of course.
Yeah.
And I want to draw your attention to Leia's insult to Luke. I've read this like 3 times as we've been talking, and I'm still just like, okay. She says, Luke, you're the farmer who swapped all the moisture you contend for an empty sack. And this sounds like this should be like a known insult right. Or a known analogy. Yeah, and it's right. Just like... Sure. Kudos yeah, to Leia for knowing about moisture farm.
I don't understand what that means, really.
And then 000 is not very helpful in the situation, and he's like, she is terribly untrustworthy. And she is. Yes. Yes. Most definitely. Luke. Do you want to read Luke's response?
Sure.
I don't want to.
So, I think this is when Leia and Sana are trying to get him to leave, and This is his response. We don't have time for this. Yes, she's rough, but she's a good person. She nearly died here with me. She's trying to find me a Jedi tutor. She's a rogue archaeologist, but she's an archaeologist. Not all rogues are bad people.
Oh my god, your Luke is uncanny. Like, something about, like, the whiny intonation. You got it. Leia's not having this, and this is the most upset I've seen her. And then Luke's response is,
I stand by my friends, Leia. Aphra's my friend.
So good. So good.
But however, I mean, this then later inspires Aphra to actually save Luke. So
yeah.
I guess that's to his benefit.
Save him-ish. I mean, She is the one who put him in that situation, and then she saves him.
Well,
from
she goes
situation.
Back for him. Like, she was just gonna bounce, and then she's like, maybe I should go back.
But I feel like since you put him in that situation, it's kind of a wash. Like, you know, yeah. And then the cultists open fire. Not entirely sure why. I don't know if the backstory like revealed anything that if you show up to you petition the queen, you're going to be killed on sight.
So actually, like, you would expect that if she didn't like whatever you presented to her, she would kill you, but she actually just dismisses them. But the people or things that she does like, she just keeps in like a dungeon. Like, they become part of her collection, and she wanted to keep Luke, and they were not happy that he was not gonna stay there.
But this was before they even met, right? Like, this is the part in the issue where, like, they landed and then there's this like interaction between Aphra and the rest of the group, and then the cultists show up.
So like, them meeting the queen and everything has already happened.
Oh, gotcha. So did that happen in that other issue? Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. And then that's why she already knows who they are clearly later in this issue. I gotcha. Okay. So then that does explain why the cultists open fire and probably shouldn't call them cultists. Like, they had a very culty vibe to me.
Well, they were like also like a hive mind. So.
Yeah. We'll stick with the cultists.
Like, they all are infested by these Abercine symbiotes that...
Yeah. Oh, Aphra and Luke go off to find the queen, and Luke asked her about, like, why she defends the Empire, and it is very Rogue One to me, where she says the Empire provides stability, and, like, my mother was killed by rebelling, or... resisting, sort of, not really. So Luke is not convinced by this, and Aphra makes this comment about him being the walking embodiment of what good farm living does for a boy. And Luke points out that the Empire murdered his family. That whole interaction was pretty awkward.
Yeah.
And so the random queen thing that happens next is not so random, because there's backstory right. that I completely missed. And then Luke is taking over. I'm still not entirely sure how the Ambersine symbiotes work.
I think they basically are just like airborne, because in that first issue of the Screaming Citadel arc, like at one point she was just like, it is time. And like all of these like motes started just like flowing through the air and like flowing into people and out of people. I don't think it's explained super well, but yeah.
Okay. Because I was thinking they look like insects. They look like they would be like yurks or something, like that thing from Wrath of Khan where you just like stick it in the ear and then
she also seems to feed on people in some way, like in a vampire-esque fashion, but not in like sucking blood from people. I don't know, it's
life force,
somewhat convoluted.
So Luke has taken over. Aphra has immunity via special goggles, and then she threatens to blow up Luke, which makes a lot of sense given the backstory I now know. Leia and Sana over here, of course. And then Han is taken over as well, which was weird. I wrote, because I didn't understand how this works, is she injecting symbiotes into their heads? What is happening? They're airborne. Okay, I can roll with that.
I think so. I think at least. Yeah, but like they are also, like you said, like a bug type creature. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I just looked them up and it says that they feed on the brainstem of sentient species.
What about semi-sentient species? Like, could Borg Gullet be taken over by a
symbiote? Good question.
It's possible. Good question. All right. Aphra, this is the point where Aphra feels a little pang of conscience. Conscience. And then she tells Leia and Sana to go while she goes back for Luke. And Sana discusses, this is the point we kind of referred to earlier, where Sana points out to Leia that Han is just as bad as Aphra, and that's no.
Disagree.
Then, I mean, the thing we didn't talk about earlier, though, is Solo with the leaving the slaves. And that's kind of like where it sits a little bit more uncomfortably.
But the sad thing is, like, I don't think that was an intentional commentary on Han's morality. I think that was just the writers not having a problem with that.
Yeah. And then I wrote, but no, let's be real, Han never threatened to blow Luke up. Which is true. I mean, he might threaten it, but he wouldn't mean it.
No.
Aphra, it's 50-50. So Leia goes back to the ship. She encounters 000. They're trying to come up with a plan. And there's some sort of realization, I want to say on 000's parts, that there are certain species that even the Amberson symbiotes wouldn't go for, or that people tried to avoid being infected by. And one of the species just happens to be Wookiees. What do you know? And BK is running for his life, and he gets knocked out, and they drag him back to the ship, and Triple Zero comes up with this amazing plan to inject him with an Amberson symbiote. However, now that we've just discussed that Amberson symbiotes are airborne, I'm not entirely sure why he had to cut open his head. Maybe they're reversed.
I'm confused at this point. Like, I really am not sure how they work.
Yeah. It's all a mystery to us. If someone wants to clarify, yeah, I would happily be educated. Maybe he was saying that the symbiotes don't even really want to infect Wookiees.
There was something that he specifically said about that, which yeah. I don't remember.
Maybe that's
exactly
why
what it was.
He had to perform the craniotomy?
Craniotomy?
Craniotomy. There we go. Maybe the symbiote wouldn't have become airborne. I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know.
If we figure it out, we'll mention.
Maybe Triple Zero just wanted to perform a craniotomy.
Yeah, it's
totally possible.
And yet, yeah, so Leia okays this. Sure. Great idea. And then issue 8 starts with a battle between Luke and the Queen. And Luke thinks he is the king. The Queen is refusing that. Han somehow manages to wrest control back, sort of. Not sure why.
I think it's partially because Leia talks to him.
True love. That part's not really clear. Aphra tries to help by sending the Eternal Roar into Luke's consciousness. Luke is not in favor of that. He pretty much just accuses Roar of not being a Jedi. You're just what a Jedi knows. That's not enough. Knowing isn't enough. Being a Jedi isn't about being. It's about letting go. And then he lets go. He's able to defeat the symbiote. He's able to defeat the Queen. It's all in the power of the Force.
I'm still trying to
figure out what how these symbiotes work. Yeah. I hadn't realized how like weird that was that Triple Zero cut open BK's head if the symbiotes are airborne.
Yeah, so there's a part in this first issue where the Queen has, like, seen all the people that she has at her audience. And then she's, like, her right-hand woman asks her if she wants Luke to be brought to her. And she says, no, we need to be at our full strength for such a confrontation. The hour is upon us. And then she, like, throws open the doors to her balcony. You must gather my harvest. And then it just shows, like, all these people sleeping and like the town below the citadel or whatever, and there are like all these like particles that are just floating around, and then she like is feeding on this woman, just like people just like sounds ridiculous for me to describe it, but they like just like have their mouths open and are just like taking in these particles, but like that has to do with the symbiotes, right?
I would assume so, but I mean, like, are the particles with the symbiotes are shedding while they're
maybe
inside
like
someone's
they're in
head?
The tank still, but maybe
no, I think they're in the host head, like a yerk.
Okay.
But they're exuding particles
maybe
that the Queen's feeding on like a whale.
Sure.
But that doesn't explain how Han and Luke are infected.
True.
So the particles have to be in parts of
maybe that's what I don't know. I don't know. I'm gonna stop trying to figure it out at this point.
I really just like the idea of the Queen being this like giant baleen whale or something, or it's just like yes, whales. All right. I feel... I wish people would write in, because I do want to know how this works, and, you know, it'd be good to have someone else figure it out.
If you are listening to this episode and you understand how the Aberson symbiotes work, please, we literally beg you to write
put us out of our misery
at StarWarsSleepover@gmail.com and explain it to us.
So, actually, this next part, it might shed some light on it, because Luke kills the queen. Han is now the king. Han freaked out.
I don't understand why Han is now the king.
I don't know either.
Because, like, why isn't anyone else in the hierarchy of the Screaming Citadel now the monarch? Anyway.
That's a great question. So maybe this won't reveal anything, but he, the idea of that much responsibility, all these people looking to him for guidance, just, Han is not in favor of that. So he orders the symbiotes to quit these people, and then the symbiotes apparently turn into smoke, and I wrote, WTF are these things? So
still a valid question.
Still a valid question. People are very happy because they're no longer possessed, as one does when one is no longer possessed. Huzzah, huzzah. But then, for some reason, Han starts ranting about doing the Kessel Run. And, like, even faster. Okay. And 000 just knocks him out. For the best. There's this whole dialogue between 000 and Leia where Leia's like, you knocked him out, but it was painful. You know why? And 000 is like, well, you didn't specify, it didn't have to be not painful. And then Leia taking 000's earlier words to heart is just really nice and weirdly flirtatious with Han, which was weird. And yeah. And then Aphra has an activated crystal, and Luke is just not, he's over it. I feel like you should read this to me.
All right.
This to me. Read this as well. Read this to me. It's because I saw your highlighted statement saying the statement was shocking to me, and I combined the two sentences.
You don't get it. Everything I said, that was learning something. That was good to know. Because people who think there's a shortcut to getting what they want, they're not just wrong. They're deluded. Now stay the hell away from me and my friends.
Oh my god, that was so hard for me to keep. Wow, that was good to know.
I'm trying seriously really hard with my Luke.
I feel like you're rocking it. Like, we're just gonna have to have you read Luke more often, because that's perfect.
I don't think it's perfect. I can do old Luke, though. You have to do old Luke.
I do have to do old Luke. I can't. I feel like I could do old Luke. I can't do young Luke. And then
it was shocking to me to clarify, because I can't imagine young Luke saying, stay the hell away from me and my friends.
It's kind of weird to hear Luke swear, to
exactly.
be honest. Yeah. Like, I would have said Luke didn't know any swear words.
Well, I accept that as canon. Luke does not know swear words.
So they part ways, and then to just rub salt right into that wound. 000 talks to Aphra, and she's pissed. She's just like ranting and like calling Luke like bantha dung or something. And says he's just really annoying. And 000 goes, I can imagine. He went through an experience just as traumatic as yours and remains a positive, delightful person devoted to a better existence for all sentient life. And you realize how special he is, too late to retain his respect. That must be an awful reminder of your own failings of character. To be honest, Master, I'm not sure I'd be able to live with myself. 000. Just rubbing that in. And then this ends with one remaining symbiote who looks like an insect, but apparently just goes right up into one of the surviving people, cultists' face, however it gets in. And that's the end of the issue. So thoughts on this one?
Well, once I realized that I was missing portions of this arc and went back and read them, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was unique and interesting, even though it doesn't 100% make sense to me. Yes. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like I wouldn't...
It's pretty cool. Super cool. I'm just, like, being inhabited by Luke now.
I'm going to try to get you to swear later and then just see if you can. I will hold off my judgment then and wait to see how I feel after I've read the other issues of this story arc. Because this was, my feeling of being baffled is still sticking with me. So we'll see how I feel when I'm enlightened. Maybe someone will write in and be like, oh, this is how Ambersign symbiotes work. All right. So the next story arc is called Aphra and the Enormous Prophets. These are issues 9 through 13. And issue 9 starts with Aphra testing her containment system for the Eternal Roar, which I felt was just highly risky. Like, why even have the droids be anywhere near? Why have both droids be all the way near? Like, you could just have BT close by and then 000 like far away. Like, I feel like, I don't know. It was stressful those first few pages. It worked though.
I was very surprised that it worked.
I was surprised too. I was convinced it was gonna like blow up in her face, or you know, 000 was gonna be taken over, something. But it does. It works. And so then it transitions to her essentially hosting an auction for the Eternal Roar. She's selling the crystal. And I swear this happened somewhere else. Was it Clone Wars? Last Shot? Something?
Just an auction in general?
Yeah, there was an auction that didn't go well. And there were all these like syndicate groups and these outlaws that showed up. Maybe this is just a general trope I'm thinking of, but I swear this.
Did you dream this?
I did not.
Was this in your dream that involved randomly ex-wife?
I swear, I'm gonna find this. I'll mention this in a Mouse Droid segment in the future because it just seemed so familiar. And then there's also a part, like, before it's revealed, she's having an auction where, like, these beefy Rodians show up. And I can't. Like, I don't know what it is about. I don't know. Maybe just because, like, they're so often nice. Well, except for Greedo. But at the same time, Greedo's not beefy. You would never describe Greedo as beefy.
No.
So it's just, when you see these, like, massive Rodians just show up, and they're like, oh! It was funny. And so then the next comment I had was about Aphra's outfit, which was phenomenal. I should try to bring that up on the what page that was, because it was just so good. I liked
her hair, which was a wig.
Yeah.
She was wearing a wig and a mask and acting like it disguised herself super well, but I would disagree.
Agreed. She has that tattoo. I'm just like, it's pretty obvious who you are.
There are even people that say her name and she's just like, oh, at least like play along. It's like, well, maybe you should have done a better job concealing your identity.
Exactly. She's wearing long gloves and this like fantastic black strapless dress with this really cool print on it. We did say there was a dress code, and she's also wearing these like cool heels that have like additional print on them. It's such a fantastic outfit. So she's hosting this auction in which she is selling off the crystal of the Eternal Roar, who can control droids and other automated systems. And she's holding it in a containment system while she has a bunch of outlaw groups, representatives and representatives of representatives in the same room, and her security system is automated guns from the ceiling, turrets, essentially. And someone points out that this seems like a bad idea, and all I could think of is, yeah, it's a bad idea. What are you doing? Then there's this whole arc with 000 getting antsy from the lack of killing, And Aphra provides him with like a very specific language about what he can and can't do. And he trots off with BT singing loophole, loophole, loophole. And this is where, like, this entire story arc, I was a little scared of 000, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of chaos, he's just creating as much chaos as he possibly can.
Yep, because he thinks Aphra is going to turn him off. And so, in response, he creates this massively chaotic situation in an effort to blackmail her for his freedom, which we'll talk about. And my question, he starts off this process by calling his actual master, or I guess a former master, current master, however that works. He puts a call in to Darth Vader, and I was like, how does that work? Like, does he just dial it in, or like...
Maybe he just had that contact information still within his memory.
And yeah, it just... Darth Vader's wrist started ringing, and he's like, what's up? Oh, it's a droid. So...
I'll answer this.
Yeah. Interesting. I find your lack of previous communication disturbing. Anyways. And then that ends issue 9. And issue 10 is essentially Aphra meeting the different bidders. I don't know what it is about the old man, Tuv. He's a scary dude.
He is very creepy.
Yeah, I think it's the teeth. But he essentially offers her money. There's a Hutt who's representing Jabba and the beefy Rodian, and they combine their offers. It's not clear what their offer actually is. The Cybon front, which appears to be free droids? I'm not entirely sure. They make an offer, but their end goal is to deactivate the crystal because they recognize that having a crystal that controls droids' consciousness is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Which, kudos to them. It definitely is.
Yeah, because as we've discussed, droids are sentient. They don't want to not be sentient.
Mm-hmm. Then the Azara are another group, and this whole interaction was just really weird. They offer... 0.0000, that might be one too many zeros, it's 4 zeros, 1% of the profits in order to get this. And Aphra's like, how much of the world do you even control? And 000, or someone clarifies, it's like 2 continents.
Yeah, she's like, oh, like, they keep talking about this empire, they do just have one planet that they control, right? And 000 is like 2 continents, actually.
And Aphra's just like, I'm not sure who's dumber, the Azara or me for inviting them. Yeah, I feel like this was supposed to be, I don't know, it felt like an inside joke. And then the next group that makes their bid is the Shadow University, which I wrote is like a nefarious higher ed institution.
Apparently, I tried to look this up because I was like, I wonder if there is any other backstory, but I think they just appear in the Dr. Aphra comics. And yeah, that's the best description for them.
I would be very interested to know more about them. And of course, like, the first thing I think of is like, how did they fundraise?
Shady ways.
Probably don't have to fundraise, right? Yeah. You could just steal stuff.
Or they just, like, I don't know. I'm sure they're not, like, writing fundraising appeals being like, please support the Shadow University.
They have graduates that they solicit.
Do you remember your time at the Shadow University? Don't you just have fond memories of your time spent on the Shadow campus?
Was something great. Our
current Shadow University students with a gift.
Oh man, the day of the Shadow University, the day of the Shadow, their annual giving.
Their day of giving.
So their offer is money plus the ability of Aphra to keep her doctorate, and she can then study the artifact, which. I feel like if you're a nefarious higher ed institution, I'm not entirely sure you can preserve someone's ability to keep their doctorate, because I feel like other institutions would just shun you, but apparently there is some sort of respectability there. And then Papa Torin, who look like small blue humanoids, they turn out to represent the Zanti brothers, who ran BK Arena, I guess. They were responsible for him being a gladiator, and he essentially flips out, which understandably so, and Aphra disables him, and he's not happy about it. And so their offer is a stake in their entertainment business, which just seems like a terrible offer. So of all these things, Aphra picks the Shadow University at the end of this issue, and then the guns activate and the droids are controlled and chaos, shockingly. All right. So issue number 11 starts with chaos, and then the Azeras are immediately killed, which I guess if you only control a continent, I don't expect you to survive. Two continents, sorry. Aphra figures out that Eternal Roar, who is in the body of a droid, is not the one who's controlling the guns, and which I think was pretty impressive. She realizes it's 000, and she reaches out to him, and he's like...
just, like, shooting people at random.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I'm just like, how did she know? Like... So there are a lot of people dying, and he tells her, 000 tells Aphra to come to the control room. And then Black BK. BK also has his own agenda. And so everyone's just essentially using Aphra at this point. And then Darth Vader shows up. So Aphra arrives at the control room. 000 reveals he's using Darth Vader as a threat. He successfully negotiates his freedom. And Aphra escapes that, so she gives BT and 000 the ability to do what they want. She escapes. BK takes her to get what he wants. And the Shadow University rep is being used as bait in a trap set by the Beefy Rodian and the other hunters. So I feel like there was like a Clone Wars thing where like they were on a planet and they're being hunted.
Yes. Yes. But I don't think that was related to an auction.
No. But I do feel like this group of, like, the Rodians and the other hunters are, like, affiliated with that larger group, perhaps. Because this sounded, like, very familiar. So Aphra kind of ruins that trap and then ruins it again. And she tries to convince the Zanti brothers that she's going to betray BK. They believe her. Because she's pretty believable. And it turns out she was not going to betray him. Although I'm not entirely sure if she wasn't. She, like, very clearly
tells... Well, yeah. Then she basically is like, I wasn't going to betray you because I'm too afraid to.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed kind of like a loose excuse. Hang on, I just, like, unplugged my computer here. All right. And whatever, BK gets what he wants. He kills their representatives and then leaves her, and she's not happy about this. And then Darth Vader's battling the Eternal Roar. Wow, this is just like a lot of at this point I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I actually did appreciate Darth Vader and the Eternal Roar battling it out. It was weird to cheer for Darth Vader a little bit. And the Rodian uses someone as a human shield. And Aphra is just like, do you want to do another, like, retelling?
Sure.
You want to be Aphra again? I'll be the Hutt.
All right.
So the Hutt's name is actually Sutha. Sutha the Hutt.
All right. Okay, human shield. Cruel, but a classic. Now, who to? Aha! Hey, Sutha, get crawling.
You will suffer for this.
Hey, we both need to run at some point. Consider me your great motivator. Wow, we made it. It's a miracle.
When the great Jabba discovers what happened here, he will have you pay.
Yeah, if he discovers. So I should really just...
And then Sooth is immediately shot by a blaster.
Wow, lucky deflection. Well, I mean, lucky for me, moral dilemma averted.
This was intense. I don't know why this particular scene just stuck with me, but I felt bad for the Hutt, and then I felt bad for feeling bad for a Hutt, and then So, yeah, she uses a Hutt as a Hutt shield. It works, and then he dies anyways. And meanwhile, the beefy Brodean is taken captive by 000 and BT. Darth Vader has this moment where it seems like it might be an equal battle, and then he just totally destroys the Eternal Roar. In a very Darth Vader and Vadering fashion. Okay, like, I feel like he's gotten so pious. Like, your trickery is inconsequential compared to the overwhelming power of the Force. And this reminded me of that because I had just read from a certain point of view, there was that whole thing with, like, Tage, where he was trying to justify, like, he's like,
you just try to pronounce that in, like, a German.
I do not know how to say
Tage. Not tag.
Tag? Is it just tag?
I would think, but I don't know.
Got the double G's, Tage.
Tage.
Anyway, yes. If someone could also indicate how to pronounce these things, I would be most appreciative. Most appreciated. There we go. Yes. So that whole short story, and from a certain point of view, was a lot of, like, justification for Tug raising concerns about Darth Vader's lack of appreciation for the Death Star, and he was articulating that he has nothing against the Force, but perhaps Darth Vader is overly religious. So Aphra narrowly escapes to hyperspace, and Vader lets her go. And then she returns the Shadow University's artifacts to other people and starts a vacation, or a vacay, as I wrote, on Zeltros. And she makes a dance.
Who does she wait to other people?
Yeah, because it sounded like she just, like, so as part of the Shadow University's offer, they offered her to, like, keep her doctorate, money, and then also these other artifacts. And it sounded or looked like she was, like, giving them to other people. They're like, oh, you were able to recover our artifacts? And she's like, yeah.
I think she was giving them it to was the Shadow University.
It was two different groups, though. Here, we'll find it.
So I thought she like, brought them back to the Shadow University, and they were just like, wow, I'm surprised that you're doing this. And she was like, yeah. And then,
so helpful.
And then they were like, oh, but, I mean, it's too bad some of them are missing. And she was like, yeah, some of them just can't be recovered, you know.
Okay, the Shadow University and then the Museum of Barleth. So one of them is her returning them to the Shadow University, and the other one is the museum, presumably, that, like, it's a shame some were lost, of course, it is. It's a shame that some couldn't be found, of course, it is. So she returns some to the Shadow University and some to some other people. And then she goes to Zeltros, which is a beach, and she orders a Dantooine ice twist, which I feel like someone should make this drink, perhaps us. And then it's revealed what happens to everyone else. So BK starts his own gladiator ring, and it wrote, thus propagating the cycle of trauma. The Rodian is a puppet figure for homicidal droids bent on control. There is a genuinely terrifying illustration of Palpatine.
Yeah, it is pretty creepy.
Yeah. Do you want to do this reading? Because I love this interaction. So Darth Vader brings Palpatine Eternal Roar's crystal. I don't know who I want to be. I feel like I'm terrible at both of them.
I feel like I want you to be Palpatine.
Okay. I do want to say present.
Prezies.
All right. I expect
really horrible breath. Darth Vader right
breath.
Now.
You gotta do the breath.
In the aftermath of the raid, much of the underworld is disputed. Strength we would have spent controlling mere criminals can be toward the rebels.
All this good news, and at present, we are blessed.
It is an ancient artifact. It believes itself a Jedi.
Put it with the rest of my collection. I'm sure we'll find some use for it. Wow, my Palpatine's just awful. Your Darth Vader's pretty good, though. And it, so Darth Vader, like, the next illustration is just, like, this, like, essentially a shelf full of these artifacts. It's a junk drawer. It's a little bit more organized. But, yeah, it's just, apparently, they've been collecting this for a long time, these things for a long time. So, I loved this. We'll find some use for it. This is like my mom talking about, like, that extra, like, oh, this button. Oh, we'll find a use for that button. Put it in my, like, my craft drawer or something. So, I appreciated that. And then Aphra's vacation is unsurprisingly interrupted by some people who start accusing her of killing people they know, and then she just kills them. Because, again, if anything you learn from this podcast, it is shoot. Don't talk. You just shoot. Like, you don't need to monologue yourself. Just kill who you meant to kill and then move on. Then you can monologue. So what are your thoughts about this one?
I liked this arc again. I thought it was fun.
I like this one, it's too.
Just relatively uncomplicated, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think I like auctions. Although I would, if I had anything, I would also suggest to Aphra to have better security. And yeah, a contingency plan, I guess.
So, yeah, I really like Dr. Aphra as a character. Again, I don't really know why, but I definitely want to read more of the Aphra comics, and there is a current run right now that I haven't even gotten into yet, and there's also an audio drama that is an adaptation of the earlier Dr. Aphra comics that I want to check out. So, I don't know, there's always just, like, way more stuff than we have even had a chance to catch up with, but definitely would get into more Aphra.
Yeah, because I think there are 27 additional issues, because whatever story arc there was, it goes to 40, or however many story arcs there are to get to issue 40, and we stopped at 13. So 27 more plus everything else. I am interested by this audio retelling. Of the three, I think I like the third one best.
I think I like Screaming Citadel best.
Ooh, this will be interesting. We'll have to talk about this in the Mouse Droid segment. If not next time, then the time after that, whenever I get around to reading it.
Well, that is it for today's show. Our intro and outro music is by Lobo Loco, and our segment break music is by Poddington Bear. You can find us on our website at StarWarsSleepover.com. And again, if you don't visit our website, you're just missing out on Loya's Photoshop jobs that she does for every episode. And the one for our last episode on Rebels is just, like, very personally meaningful to me. So you should check it out. We're also on Twitter at SW Sleepover and on Instagram at Star Wars Sleepover. We're definitely most active on Instagram. Please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing wherever you listen if you like us, because it does help others to find us. And definitely just spread the word to anyone that you think might be interested in listening. We will be back in 2 weeks with the return of Galactic Glamour, which I'm very excited about. So thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you.